The views expressed in the following program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of Saga 960 AM or its management.
All right, hey, how are you? It's me, Ed the Suck, and this is Ed the Suck Lives. The title of the show is because, just to confirm, I'm not dead. I'm doing AM radio, which is the next best thing. But I've been doing social media for years now, and that's a fate worse than death. So I'm glad to actually be here, all jokes aside, because here at AM Radio at Saga 960 AM, I can talk with you. Because social media is all really pretty much just one way. I get to talk at you, and you can sometimes talk back at me. But here, we have phone lines. That's right, phone lines. Remember those things? Phones? When you use them to actually call people? Well, what's what we use them for here? It's very analog in mind, but very digital in spirit. So, want to make sure that you give us a call. You can talk about anything you want. The only thing I ask is, please don't knowingly be a moron. And if you're being a moron and you don't know it, trust me, I will tell you. Our phone number here is 416-640-0200. 416-640-0200. And I feel like I'm kind of like I'm back in Rocky III. You guys remember Rocky III when he went back to his roots, got rid of all the glitz and went back to his roots? Julie, did you ever see Rocky III?
No, I was too little.
What do you mean you were too little? You don't have a DVD player?
No, I didn't see it. I'm so sorry.
Have you seen any Rocky movies?
Maybe the last one.
Oh, no. If you saw a Rocky movie, you'd know. There'd be no hesitation.
Okay, yeah, I'm not the best person to be.
Okay, well, here's a homework assignment. You got to watch Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Rocky 3.
Okay.
And then skip the rest until Rocky Balboa. But you'll want to watch more, trust me.
Okay.
All right?
All right, I'll write that down.
You probably haven't seen Star Wars either, have you?
I have no interest, I'm sorry.
Oh, this is going to be a rough ride, Julie. All right, strap in. All right. I'm willing to take your calls at 640-0200, area code 416. But just a bit of a warning, I'm not here to make you laugh. You may laugh, but I'm here to make you think, okay? And I'm not on your side. No matter what side you're on, I'm not on your side. We've moved into a world where you're either on one side or you're on the other side. And if you're on one side, everything the other side does is bad, and everything the people on your side does is good. And that's not exactly the way I want to live in the world. Because sometimes people on the right make sense, sometimes people on the left make sense. So I'm not here to be on your side. People watch me on TV, always assume that because I'm, well, a bit brusque, that you assume that I'm right-wing, because nowadays right-wingers are just loud and noisy. And while I am loud and noisy, I am not your right-wing buddy, okay? So if you want right-wing stuff, call Mark Petroni, all right? He'll listen to you. Me, I'm willing to listen to you, but don't expect me to agree with you. My job is to puncture stupidity, whether it's on the left or the right, or the middle. And we have a call? Already? Okay, let's give it a wing. Hello?
Hey, it's a Suck. How are you? I've been listening and watching you for decades.
All right, what's your name?
Rio, R-I-O.
Rio?
Yeah.
Oh, like the Duran Duran song.
That's right, I get that. I get Blame It on Rio, Rio de Janeiro, but I tell people Ontario, so I get all of that.
Rio. Rio is in Brazil, right?
That's right. That's
so
right.
Have you had a Brazilian?
I got to keep all those things quiet.
Oh, if you were having a Brazilian, you wouldn't be quiet.
I have an Ecuadorian wife, I can tell you that.
All right. I wasn't interested in that, but thank you for that bit of information. His name is Rio, and he calls me on the phone.
Oh, that's great.
All right, so what did you want to ask me, Rio?
Okay, you've got to be an expert in this field.
Likely
not. What is the best sock? What do you think is the best sock?
The best?
Like, I always like McGregor. I wear Wilson socks. I think the other one's Puma, whatever, but you got to be an expert in that field.
This is the first call I take? Somebody referring to my ethnicity? I don't have any particular opinions on which brand of socks are the best.
Well, I didn't want to get heavily political or anything, right?
So you definitely veered away from getting heavily political.
Yeah.
You asked me something ridiculous instead.
Well, you gotta be the sock guy. Who else am I gonna ask?
I don't know. Somebody at a store that sells socks?
No, I like the McGregor sock, but they closed. I guess they're making them in China now, right? So I thought you could give me a heads up.
Well, if you like McGregor socks, find out who's making them in China. Why do I have to put two and two together for you?
Well, you're the sock man.
Is your name really Rio?
When I need a plumbing job, I ask the plumbing guy.
Okay, is your name really Rio?
Yeah, it is really. I've been calling this station since day one, so they know.
They know.
Oh,
they didn't warn me about you. Rio, is that, if I was to check your driver's license or your birth certificate, would it say Rio?
It would say Rio, for sure, 100%.
What the hell were your parents thinking?
Oh, that's it. Rio Bravo, the movie, right?
Oh, the Western.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't want to... If I would be a Robert, there's like thousands, tens of thousands of Roberts probably in Canada alone, right? There's not too many Rios.
No, and you might want to be a Robert because really nothing you've said so far is remarkable, so I don't know why you'd want to stand out.
Well, it can't be remarkable because I'm asking you the question.
Yeah, and it wasn't a remarkable question either. Rio, is your middle name Bravo?
I didn't get a good answer either, right?
What? Shut up. Is your middle name Bravo?
No.
What's your middle name?
Tomislav. You know King Tomislav?
No, where's that from?
It's from Croatia.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm an expert on Croatia.
Well, you should be. We're the best sporting athletes in the world, world champions in every sport you could name.
I think Canadians are the best athletes in the world.
Well, when they're Joe Sakic, and that's where his bloodline comes from. The best Canadian hockey player, the Mahovlitches.
What, Mahovlitz was the best Canadian hockey player?
No, I said the upper elite ones, right? It's like you don't get a guy named Johnson being away in Gretzky. Gretzky's also Eastern European, right?
All right, well, I'm glad for your ethnic pride, and thank you for calling me to ask questions about my ethnicity, but I was officially bored of you about 3 minutes ago, so I'm going to say goodbye, okay? Goodbye, Rio.
We'll see ya.
I hope not. All right, that was Rio. His name was Rio, and he bored me on the phone. Okay, is it time for us to go to a break? All right, we're going to go to a break. I just want to warn you one other thing. I'm not here to say anything to offend you. There are things I might say that may offend you, but nowadays anything with common sense offends somebody. All right, we're going to go to a break here on Saga 960 AM. Phone number 416-640-0200. Call, but don't be Rio.
No radio? No problem. Stream us live on saga960am.ca.
Welcome back to Ed the Sock Lives. If you can't figure out who I am from that title, you're beyond my help. Also beyond my help are people who really fear an arbitrary date in the calendar, Friday the 13th, of which today is one. There are even two fancy book learning scientific names for fear of this day. Let me try these. Periscavedeca triophobia and frigatriscadecophobia. Wow. For some people, the fear is real, even if the reason for their fear isn't real. Why do people let irrational crap pollute their brains? To get an idea, I have an expert on human psychology, professor of psychology at York University, Dr. James Alcock. Dr. Alcock, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, in that stew of chemicals and gray matter that forms our consciousness, what lets weird notions take root?
Well, the thing is, we have actually two ways of processing information. One of them is the rational, where we logically evaluate information, try to come to some rational conclusion. The other is intuitive, automatic, and it's a primitive system that serves us very well most of the time, but it allows us to accept things that are irrational as though they are true. And sometimes these can be very compelling. They can affect us emotionally. And sometimes we even have a conflict. So you can have, for example, people who don't for a moment believe that walking under a ladder is dangerous, and yet if they do walk under a ladder, they feel this sense of dread. And that's the two parts of our information processing, in that case, in conflict.
Well, in the second case, you said that sometimes that serves us in good stead. In which cases does it serve us in good stead?
Well, it's an automatic part of our brain. And so, for instance, if you're walking across the street and suddenly a bus goes out of control and is careening towards you, you don't have time to sort of logically evaluate. If you were to say to yourself, okay, now what should I do now? You'd be hit. You'd be out of action. But intuitively, what you're going to do is run as fast as you can to get out of the way of the bus. And that's part of that automatic system. And so that automatic system is always making connections between events, trying to find out what causes what. And sometimes we end up believing things that aren't true. But, you know, if you look at the history of evolution, the cost of learning connections that are false is much less sometimes than missing connections that are true. So let's suppose you take an animal out in the woods. It eats something, it gets very sick. And let's suppose that the food has nothing to do with the sickness. But in its brain, it will now associate the smell of that food with being sick, and it will avoid that food forever. So even if it's wrong, as long as there are other foods around, there's not much of a cost. On the other hand, if it had a rational brain and said, well, I'm not sure that made me sick, I think I'll try it again, it now exposes itself to the possibility of really being poisoned the next time. So the cost of error often is less than the cost of missing something that's true. And that's why our intuitive system sometimes leads us to have these reactions that rationally make no sense.
So this is like kind of, there was a time that I ate Kentucky Fried Chicken, and then I got the flu like the same evening. And so ever since then, I assert that Kentucky Fried Chicken makes me get the flu or makes me have flu-like symptoms. Is that the same kind of association you're talking about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is automatic. And even though rationally you may say to yourself, no, I know it wasn't the chicken, nonetheless, emotionally, intuitively, you're going to have that apprehension every time someone tries to feed you some fried chicken.
Now, this is also like the reason I don't read horoscopes. I think that astrology is complete bunk. We're talking about light from stars that was sent hundreds or thousands of years ago, and people think that somehow affects our lives today. I think it's complete nonsense, astrology. Yet at the same time, I don't read my horoscope, because if it says something good, I don't believe it. If it says something bad, I start to have this creeping sense of worry.
Well, again, that's the same thing I'm talking about, these two systems. The rational system says this is all bunkum, it's nonsense. And I agree with you. The emotional system says, hold on, just in case, there might be some danger here. And so our brains are very sensitive to detecting threats. And even if the threats are false, they can affect us emotionally. And so it can be hard sometimes to shake off that feeling.
Now, on something like Friday the 13th, besides it being a series of very, very bad movies, and so I understand people having a fear of bad movies based on Friday the 13th, but just on the date itself, is it possible that people become so hyper alert that they wind up making mistakes because they're nervous, because they're worried about something bad happening on Friday the 13th? So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Yeah, absolutely right. If people take it that seriously, you're absolutely right. It's like any superstition, the old superstition about a black cat crossing your trail. If you're subject to that superstition, you're driving along and a black cat crosses your trail and you somehow now are worried that this is going to cause you bad luck, you may pay less attention to the road and you may run into a tree. And then you say, aha, the black cat caused it, even though it had nothing to do with it.
So we establish causal relationships, which are not actually causal relationships.
That's correct. That happens automatically.
Now, how much of this, though, is the brain trying to take control of the unknown? Because we always want control and certainty and security. And if we know that there's a certain, if we intuit or emotionalize, if that's even a term, I may have made it up, that there is a risk, we can avoid that risk, thereby asserting some greater sense of control over our lives, which otherwise feel like we're on a skateboard going, you know, out of control.
Well, I think you make a good point. And, you know, I mentioned earlier the baseball player. There's some good research that shows that a professional baseball player who is going to go to bat soon the team is behind. He's got his favorite superstition. He believes that if he, you know, knocks on wood or scratches his knee three times or whatever, this will bring him good luck. By doing that, even though he may recognize it as irrational, it will help him relax. And because it helps him relax, he's more likely to be successful at the batting plate. And that will reinforce the superstition, even while he recognizes that it doesn't really make sense.
So sometimes having that crap floating around in our cranium actually benefits us.
Well, that's right. Although I think in the long run, the risks of reacting to that system, taking it to be truth, are greater than the benefits.
I want to thank you very much, Dr. James Alcock, professor of psychology at York University, for helping us wade through this. I want to thank all of you for listening. Don't forget the phone lines are open. We'll be back on Ed Dasok Lives here on Saga 960 AM.
Stream us live at saga960am.ca.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Julie, you seen Raiders of the Lost Ark? I'm betting you haven't.
Nope, I haven't.
You gotta see Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay.
It's a great movie. It doesn't matter if you're into that kind of stuff or not. It's an amazing movie. I'm going to have to make a list of things that you're going to have to... I'm going to give you a list of things to watch, and then you're going to come back with, like, a book report.
Okay.
So that I know... And don't try to read the synopsis on IMDb and tell me that, because I'm going to ask you specific questions. So get ready. This is coming. All right, welcome back to Ed Dasok Lives here on Saga 960 AM. And we're taking your phone calls as well. We've got guests coming up. Phone calls are 416-640-0200. Talk to me about anything you want to talk about. Politics, news, some pet peeve of yours, whatever you want, the weather, whatever you want to talk about, call. Let's make it interesting. Unlike Rio. Okay, so we've got a call. Is this Mary Jane?
Hello.
Hello. How are you, Mary Jane?
I'm doing great. How's it going, Ed?
I'm good. Thank you for calling. So what's on your mind?
Oh, well, you know, I've seen that you had a radio show, and I've been a fan and follower for many, many years. Not giving away my age there, but just want to say congratulations. I always knew you had the face for radio. I mean, the voice for radio.
You were preparing that one, huh?
You worked on that one.
You sat there working on it. You had like pen and paper by the midnight oil, and you were working on that joke, weren't you?
Really? What kind of a stand-up comedian would I be if I had to do all that?
Are you a stand-up comedian?
Aren't we all?
No, some people sit down.
Well, I mean, if you're stuck in a wheelchair, that's probably the only way you're going to do it, isn't it?
I've known some comedians who were in wheelchairs. They're very funny people. Now, are you also a painter?
I am a painter, I am an artist, I'm a singer. I pretty much do it all.
Oh, because when I was doing something on Instagram, you were there, weren't you?
I was there. I've still got the painting of you for you.
Oh, well, I want to see that. I'll be back on that sometime soon. So you're a singer. Sing something for us.
Something for us? I don't know that song.
Oh, wow. We need a rim shot for this. She's here all week, folks. Come on, sing.
Hey, I didn't say I was good.
Sing Wind Beneath My Wings.
Give me the line.
Oh, for crying out loud, you don't know Wind Beneath My Wings? I don't ever tell you you're my hero. You're everything I want to be. I can fly high, higher than an eagle.
Ready?
Yeah.
Together.
Because you are the wind beneath my wings. That's perfect. All right, we got a duet album coming out. All right. Thank you, Mary Jane. Anything else you want to add?
No, just have a great show.
Thank you. I intend to.
Bye.
Bye, Mary Jane. That's Mary Jane calling. And you can be part of this show as well. 416-640-0200. We have a guest because a lot of people used to be AM radio was the place you turned to for music. There was a time, believe it or not, yes, I know Julie doesn't believe it, because Julie hasn't seen anything cultural from the 20th century, and she's not aware of any of the fact. Julie, did you know that there was music on AM radio once?
No, I think I was still in the womb.
You're still, okay, so there was once, I'm telling you, there was once music on AM radio, that went away. and then it moved to FM radio, but now people aren't listening to FM radio. Now people are getting their music on the internet, and there is, you know, 98% of everything is crap, and there's 98% of that music on the internet is crap. But the thing is, there's so much of it, you have to wade through a lot of crap to find the pearls. And so I wanted to find out, in service of you, my lovely audience, how do you find good music these days? And the person I turn to is one of North America's premier music journalists. He's been around, I'm not even going to say how many years, but a long time, probably since before Julie was conscious. His name is Ben Rayner, and he's with us now. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Ed. Nice to hear your voice.
And yours, too.
I will congratulate you on the radio show, too.
Well, thank you.
I'm excited for you.
Well, thank you very much. You may be more excited than I am. So, Ben, you know about music. I mean, you yourself are a music aficionado. You didn't just write about it because it was something to do. You love music. You live music. Where do people go these days to find any decent music? How do you curate through all of that garbage that's polluting the internet?
Well, as you know, I was a newspaper music journalist for, God, well, half my life, literally half my life until I left the Toronto Star earlier this year. And I still think that there is some value to music criticism, and I'm one of the I like reading about music. I still, that's kind of, you know, my principal way of kind of sorting through, separating the wheat from the chaff, you'll say. I still like to read what other people think, and I like that, you know, when there was kind of this culture of music criticism, you could kind of develop a relationship with music writers that you read regularly, even if you hated them. You know, not to, you know, if you hated Ben, hey, you'd be like, well, I'm not touching that record because he likes it. But, you know, there was a good barometer of taste there. And I would look forward to, you know, I had a subscription to Spin, my dad got Rolling Stone, you know, and the first thing I would do is go to the record reviews. And I used to like opening weekend newspapers and reading the record reviews. And I that stuff's still out there to some extent, although even a lot of the music blogs that proliferated a few years ago are going away. But I still think there's some value in, like, having somebody else, you know, curate your playlist for you, or at least give you a nod in the right direction. Because it is, there's a lot, man. It's overwhelming. I find myself, it's sort of like when you're scrolling through Netflix or Prime, you're just overwhelmed and you wind up watching another episode of Bob's Burgers that you've seen three times. But I find if I sit down at my laptop or my phone and looking through Spotify, a lot of the time I'm just kind of overwhelmed by how much there is. And like you said, a lot of it is just because people can put music out more easily now, it doesn't mean that it's music has gotten better. It's just like there's that filter is removed. I mean, back in the day, you had to press a record or a CD, you know what I mean? Now it's sound files. So I get you. I'm not a huge fan of, like, the algorithm telling me what I want to listen to, although sometimes that's helpful. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's way off base. So I guess betwixt and between, my point is that it's gotten really tough to kind of figure out what's out there. Unless you're immersed. I mean, I'm lucky. It's my job, right? So I keep up on it. But I can't imagine being just sort of an average casual music fan and combing through the endless number of titles available these days.
Yeah, there's just too much out there. And, you know, you made a good point, which is, you know, I made this point, too, about television content. You know, back in the day with music, you had to be real serious. You couldn't just be a bunch of guys who got together and played, and then somehow your music was transmitted. You had to really be serious. You had to put some real discipline into your music. You had to go. You had to raise some money for yourselves, and you had to put your money where your mouth is, and you had to have a record pressed, and then you had to try to get carried by a record company or try to get a radio station to carry your record, which was difficult, but you had to really, really be good. And the process of getting yourself carried by a record label, it helped separate the wheat from the chaff, though you could argue that it separated the wheat from the chaff and it only kept the chaff. But there was a process and there were steps along the way, sort of like filters that stopped the really bad stuff from getting out there. And now there's no filter. Anybody with their phone can record a music video. You can use GarageBand or whatever the hell people use in their computers to multi-track your recording, put it out there, and some unsuspecting lout, hey, this sounds interesting, let me listen to it. Ah! And then their ears are bleeding. You know, like that thing that they put in Chekhov's ear in Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan.
Yes, I remember the thing. Yeah. I'll bet your producer doesn't remember that.
No, she has no idea what I'm talking about. No. So there's no refinement process anymore. People can put out, you know, the raw product, and there's no refinement process. There's no gatekeeping. And some people say, that's great, there's no gatekeeping. But they haven't spent hours trying to find something decent to listen to.
Well, too, I love my records, and I'm staring at my turntables right now and my thousands of records and CDs. I'm a live music guy, and I find that's how I discover a lot of stuff, is because I have the luxury of going to a lot of shows. And I love going to a festival like South by Southwest, say, where you can just watch bands from 11 in the morning till 2 a.m. And I do. Like, I abandon my friends, and I try to see as much as I can, because I love that thrill of discovering a band on stage. And usually I kind of back into the albums through that. But that avenue of pleasure has been denied to me since, what, mid-March. So it's, you know, that's how I discover stuff. I love going to shows. I love being in a crowd. I know that's not fashionable these days, but I love being in a crowd of people just losing it to a band kicking ass. And there's nothing better than that first time you see an act, a new act that you've never seen, that just blows your mind. And I think about the first time I saw A Place of Very Strangers or Pins or Bonnie Trash or any number of my, reigning obsessions. And I miss that. But that, to your point earlier, you have to be good to win people, you know what I mean? So there is that avenue, that extra layer of gatekeeping. To get on stage and be good, you have to be good. But yes, you're right. Now, I mean, back in the day, at least you had to put a stamp on your terrible singer-songwriter album and mail me a CD when I worked at the Star, you know? And now it's just an email. And I'm actually kind of glad that my old work account has been deactivated since March, because it was just overwhelming sometimes. It's just like, you know, you just hit send. Here's my new record.
Yeah, I'm getting some of that now.
I get hundreds of those a week.
Yeah, I'm getting a small fraction of it now since I'm starting up this online music channel, video channel, and I'm getting some of that now, and I'm like, oh, it's to go through it and listen to it, and it's like I want to hire somebody, but to them it'd be like living in one of the Dante's levels of hell, having to go through all of this. Now, you said that it's good to find some person that you follow to curate the music or to give you recommendations. How do you go about, Ben Rayner, finding somebody you trust who will curate for you?
Well, I mean, it's read a lot, and it's harder, man.
People don't read today, Ben. People don't read.
Staples of everyone's musical diet are gone, and the ones that hang on are a pale shadow of what they used to be. But you can go online to Stereo Gum or Pitchfork and stuff like that, and there are people like me who still write about music, although a lot of sort of daily organs, I guess, that used to cover entertainment have kind of abandoned it, which is depressing. So I don't know. It is tough. I mean, you got to hunt, and there is, there are good writers out there. You can find them. There's still guys like kind of the classics, like John Perelli is at the New York Times and stuff. Those guys haven't gone away.
So
it's so weird. I feel, I'm in my mid 40s. I feel like a dinosaur these days, because it is strange. And I think the often stated, but I mean, in the internet age, when anyone can give a thumbs up or click on a heart on Twitter or whatever, and vote, like it did kind of delegitimize critics, because everybody was a critic. And I'm not about to say it's sort of like, yes, the gatekeeper is removed, but at the same time, not everyone is a good critic.
Everybody's a good anything. You know what I mean? That's why you got to really test it out. Like you used to test out film critics if they liked a movie and you went to see it and you liked it. So I guess you got to find people, test out their taste, see if their taste is like yours, and then follow through with that. Is that correct, Ben Rayner? Because we're coming to the end of the segment.
It's harder and harder to find those regular names to engage with, which is sad, because a lot of the traditional outlets for this kind of music journalism have abandoned it. So it is harder to develop that relationship.
All right.
Like,
well,
music, like movie critics are still out there, but I don't know, for some reason nobody likes us music critics. Maybe because we ruin their good time by crapping on their favorite bands all the time.
No, that's me. I was me. I was always crapping on people's favorite bands.
Ben Rayner. I love you, my friend.
Ben Rayner, I want to thank you for joining us. Where can people find you?
Right now, you can always find me on Twitter at I Hate Ben Rayner. I'm co-hosting a little web series for Friends of Canadian Broadcasting called The Chesterfield. It's a lot of fun when we talk to Canadian artists about their favorite piece of Canadian art. I've had on Fred Penner this week. Actually, this week's episode, I talked to Max Kerman from the Arkells about his love of the Constantines in Great Toronto Band.
Well, I don't know why that list hasn't included me so far, but we'll work that out. Thank you, Ben Rayner.
Anytime.
All right, Ben Rayner. Find him at I Hate Ben Rayner. We're here at Saga at 960 AM. Phone number is 416-640-0200. Our Hollywood report is coming up and another phone call. Let's go to a break. We'll be right back.
No radio? No problem. Stream us live on saga960am.ca.
All right, welcome back to Ed the Sock Lives. Guess who I am? We have a phone call. Let's take that call. Is this Mo?
Ed, what's going on, man?
How you doing, Mo?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good.
You've become such a big shot since you started on News Talk Saga. I have to call into your radio station. You won't return my calls or my texts anymore.
Well, I have to try to funnel all the conversation into this show. I don't want it to seep out.
I need
out.
Some advice. You always give me good advice, and I need some from you today.
All right, let's hear it. First bit of advice is don't ask me for advice. But if you're going to pass that off, let's hear the question. I'm ready.
All right, so I'm a single guy. I'm wondering, should I be dating in the time of COVID right now? Should I be out there trying to meet people, or should I hunker down? What should I be doing?
Wow, you're asking me for dating advice. Things are really that bad, are they, Mo? Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with dating in the COVID era. You just got to do it over Zoom. Or the other option is you can, I don't know if you remember years ago, there was a big craze. They were called sumo suits. There were giant suits that people put on to look like sumo wrestlers. And it covered them all the way up to their neck. So if you wear one of those and a mask, you should be able to meet somebody in person. So I think that sumo dating will be a new thing. Like, just go out wearing one of those big padded suits. That way you're covered. You're safe. And you should wear a face shield as well, because nothing says romance like a face shield.
I guess that's good for social distancing, right? With the sumo suit, like, even if you wanted to get in close, you can't.
That's right, though. I'm guessing that maintaining social distancing isn't a problem for you lately, is it, Mo?
No. That's why I'm here, calling you, trying to get some advice.
All right. Well, have I been able to help you at all?
Not at all, but I appreciate the insight.
I warned you before it started. All right. Thank you, Mo.
Thanks so much, Ed.
All right. That was Mo. You can call in 416-640-0200. 416-640-0200. Hello, Andy. How are you?
You know, I'm doing damn good. I'm ice fishing with Mary Walsh right now in Kenora. It's a blast.
Oh, well, careful. The ice might be a bit thin.
Well, you know what? If we do get wet, things are going to be damn good. Colin Mockery and Rick Mercer, they're making mulled wine back at the cabin. So it's going to be a good Canadian Christmas this year. I'm feeling good about it.
Oh, mulled wine. Does anything say winter like mulled wine? What is mulled wine?
No, maybe like a cider, a nice cider, a shandy. Those are really delicious. How you doing, baby? I love your show.
Thank you.
You sound damn good. Julie's amazing. She just took such good care of me. I felt like I was at the Four Seasons. Landscaping.
I was wondering which Four Seasons. So what's happening in Hollywood? What should we know about? Tell me some stories.
All right. Three things I want to talk about. I want to get into Jeffrey Toobin. I don't know if anyone's familiar about this.
Oh, Jeffrey.
He's a 30-year... Huh?
Jeffrey Toobout?
Toobout. Is it Toobout?
No, it's Toobin, but he had his Toobout.
Who cares? No one cares anymore. He's suspended. He is a 30-year veteran writer at The New Yorker, and he was caught pleasuring himself on a Zoom conference call. Can you imagine?
I don't want to imagine, but unfortunately, because of this story, I've had to imagine. He's not exactly an Adonis. That was a story. I mean, he got fired from The New Yorker now because he was on some kind of conference call, and he thought the conference call was over, and he started spanking the monkey.
Yeah.
In front of his co-workers. There he is, spanking the monkey.
I can't imagine. You know, that's something I would do on a dare, but I don't think, you know, it's something I would do just like, you know, on a casual Tuesday afternoon after a Zoom call, but, you know.
Maybe the Zoom call got him very excited. Maybe he's got one of those weird kinks where he gets off on Zoom calls. Maybe that's a whole new area of sex that'll be discovered after COVID, is people who get sexually inspired by Zoom calls.
Oh, yeah. You know, fun things do happen at Condé Nast, let me tell you. I've been meaning to get to New York in a while, and now Jeffrey Toobin has lost his entire troubadour, whatever his name is. You know, he has some time on his hands, and a lot of other things, too. So maybe we can get into a little bit of fun together and have a nice little drink.
Well, just do it on Zoom. That seems to be... See, that's where his next career move needs to be. Because there's women who pleasure themselves on media that way. Maybe Jeffrey Toobin can start a whole thing, Celebrity Jerk Club. And
sure.
Maybe other celebrities whose star has fallen can get online and start doing streaming where they pleasure themselves. It's 2020. Anything goes. There's that service Cameo where you can get a greeting from any celebrity that you want for various amounts of money. Maybe we should start up a service where you can get various male celebrities to pleasure themselves for various amounts of money. You can set the rate. So, like, maybe, you know, $20 for Casper Van Dien or somebody like that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. The Corey Feldmans of the world always seem to clamor around when there's some sort of controversy. So, you know, who knows?
I don't want to see Corey Feldman do that. All right, what's the next story?
All right, Kevin Hart, Woody Harrelson, Kaylee Cuoco, and the lovely Helen Barkin. What do they have in common, baby?
You're talking about them?
Yeah, I guess so. They're in Brampton, Ontario, of all beautiful, lovely places. You know, the Paris of Canada. And, you know, they're filming a film there. Kevin Hart's filming this film called Man from Toronto, which is the riveting life story of Drake, you know, and his challenges of playing a wheelchair-ridden child on Degrassi Junior High and working with Debbie Travis to build some insane mall-sized house in Toronto. You know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a myth fun. I'm there for it.
Wait, is it really about Drake?
No, it's a dumb action movie that I'm never going to watch. It's coming out next year. It's a Sony Pictures film. It won't win an Oscar.
It doesn't even make any sense.
At the box office.
It doesn't make any sense. The idea of an action comedy set in Toronto. What does the guy do? He jaywalks and then he barricades himself in his house because he's afraid the police are coming to get him?
Well, I mean, I'm doing my own action film up here with Mary Walsh and Kenora. It's fun. Ice fishing with Mary. Now, that's the Canadian action thriller I'm down for.
Well, you know, you remember that old movie Speed, which was Keanu Reeves, where he was on a bus, and if the bus slowed down, there was a bomb on it that it would explode, and he had to figure out how to disarm the... Well, the Canadian version of that movie was a bunch of people on a bus, but no bomb. It was just 90 minutes of people on a bus. So, though, considering that they're shooting a movie called The Man from Toronto in Toronto, they should actually, if they're going to be like you know, the way movies are normally made, where they make Toronto, New York set movies shot in Toronto, they should shoot The Man from Toronto in New York just to create a balance.
Well, yeah, or just to replicate half my friends. I mean, most people leave the six so they can get out of there and come out east or come out west or something, you know. But I don't know. Kevin Hart, toast to him. He also celebrated 100 million followers in Brampton. So, you know, there's going to be a nice little plaque and maybe, you know, the Shriners might come out and do a little do for him. But 100 million followers for Kevin Hart, good on you.
Kevin Hart in Brampton. Well, how about that? I'm sure there's lots of people making little, getting selfies with him. And what's the final story? Very quickly.
You know, who's really maybe considered getting out of the business altogether? Because I'm just so blown away by their pathos and just their connection to film and cinema. Jan Arden. I'm mesmerized by Jan Arden. I love her very deeply and severely. And, you know, charges are pending. I'm kind of a stalker. It's a little weird, but she has a show on CTV called Jan on CTV. You should check it out Mondays, 8 Eastern Pacific. You can also stream it on Crave and Hulu in the States coming out there in the next season. So I'm excited about it. It's a damn good show and people from all ages and genders are going to get really into it when they watch it. I blasted through the first season in the night with a big tub of ice cream. So a toast to Jan Arden in 2020 and 2021.
All right. Well, I don't want to hear about you being at home blasting. So I want to thank you, Andy Willis, Andy Land, for joining us and giving us this update.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. I love it very much.
Thanks very much. It's Andy Willis, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to go to a break now, right, Julie? All right, we're going to go to a break here on Ed the Sock Libs and come back with a bit of poetry. Stick with us.
No radio? No problem. Stream us live on saga960am.ca.
All right, we're back on Ed the Sock Libs, down in the waning moments here. You know what I want to do, Julie? Let's take the poetry piece first. Then if we have time, we'll take the call. David, who's holding online. I want to add a little class to the show, so I found a poet laureate. His name is Andrew Nurse. Andrew, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going?
Okay. Andrew, we're running out of time, so I want to hear your poem. Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. It's called Engines Running on Empty Stomachs. Waiting for a morning where all the work has been completed. Like a higher force came in the night and cleaned up everything inside. When you get some energy of your own, don't know what to do with it. Plenty of ideas, low on juice to give them. Idling in place, they lose their heat. Engines running on empty stomachs. Years of this are lived lazily until you see creases in your face and begin to search yourself for another definition. Press against the window, wonder what's happening outside. Inside is as close as I can get to living alone in some forest where I would pine for commotion. Put your world in the sun until it starts to grow, you won't lose a dime. Put it in your back pocket till it burns a hole, it'll cost everything. You'll blame the past and everything outside, refusing to be commanded while the noise inside grows louder from the howls of engines running on empty stomachs.
That's it?
That's it.
All right. I don't know what the hell that meant, but thank you for giving a little bit of class to us.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Do we have time to take this call even, Julie? No. All right, David, call back next week. I'm sure your question will be just as relevant next week as it is this week. All right, this has been the first edition of Ed the Sock Lives. And who knows, every episode could be my last. Jyoti's sitting there taking notes. You never know, she could come at me with a shovel. So we'll never know what happens. So every week, tune in to see if I'm still here on Saga 960 AM. Don't forget, if you're listening to us on the podcast, don't forget, Fridays, 2 p.m., 960 AM or saga960am.ca. I'm Ed the Sock. Don't take any wooden nickels.